Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
So what do you do if an election is stolen? What do you do if somebody walks in and walks off? I mean, what should we do? What if you think the election was stolen? Let me reframe this. What would you do if you came home and discovered that somebody kicked in your front door, walked off with all your furniture, and you look down the street through the open, through the picture window of the house three houses down, and you notice that all the furniture in their living room looks just like yours used to be? So you're pretty sure the guy living three houses down just stole all your furniture. You get on and take a look at it. Yep, there's the cigarette burns on it. There's the old beer stain. Yep, that's my furniture. What do you do? What do you do if some guy comes along and says, hey, quit whining about it. It's past history. He's already got your furniture. Get over it. I'm not sure I'd be getting over it. Greetings, by the way, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. Why is it that some folks on the left, are saying, oh, gee, Robert Kennedy has evidence, prosecutable evidence. In fact, four people right now in the state of Ohio are under indictment. For rigging, for Republicans, for rigging the elections in 2004. Already four of them are, and that's in a state controlled by the Republicans. Why is it that some, and Robert Kennedy last night told me that he's going to be bringing charges against people. In fact, he's asking people to contact him if they're, you know, whistleblowers or people who have knowledge of what happened in Ohio, to contact him and his law firm, him and Mike Papatino. And, you know, if you've got information to share with them. So why is it that there are people on the left who are saying, oh, get over it, quit whining, that's ancient history? I'm sorry, if somebody just, you know, kicked in my front door and stole all my furniture, and then, you know, somebody comes along and says, ah, get over it, it's over. I say, no, I don't think so. A, I want my furniture back. B, I want that guy's butt thrown in jail, and because C, I don't want him to steal my bedroom furniture. I don't want him coming over the next week and kicking in the door and stealing my dog or my wife. I mean, God, yeah, not to sound too possessive, but yeah. I mean, how far is this going to go? What's he going to start taking out members of my family and holding them hostage? I mean, the guy is nuts. He's stealing my furniture. Why should we behave any differently toward a stolen election? Can somebody explain this to me? I don't get it. I'm hearing two theories. I'm getting these emails from people. A lot of this comes out of the fact that I wrote this piece in Common Dreams. It's still up at commondreams.org, saying, let's stand up for democracy with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And, in fact, I don't know if Lori is a listener. I got an email from somebody who read the op-ed piece that I wrote. She's in Yonkers, New York, on the piece that I wrote on commondreams.org, which was picked up in the Baltimore Chronicle and other papers. She says, why is the New York Times not giving proper coverage? This is a letter that she wrote. She says, I got your democracy tag, because at the end of the article it said, remember, democracy begins with you, tag, you're it. And she says, I got your democracy tag, and I went with it. See below. Excuse me. The wonders of a sneeze button there for when you really sneeze. Anyhow, she says, I never wrote to the New York Times before. So here's what she wrote to the New York Times. She says, why is the New York Times not giving proper coverage or any coverage to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article in RollingStone.com on the stealing of the 2004 election? Republicans prevented more than 350,000 voters in Ohio from casting ballots or having their votes counted, enough to have put John Kerry in the White House, by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RollingStone.com, June 1, 2006. It is vital that Americans see this thorough study, which exposes the outright fraud and criminal activity in Ohio that gave the White House to Bush a second time. Is the choice of publication a reason to suppress the truth? Shouldn't Kennedy's status be enough to give credence to the issue? Show some guts here and put this story front and center so people can find out the scope of what happened and what's likely to happen again in 06 and 08. Because I'm telling you, if somebody kicks in your front door and steals your living room furniture, they're probably not going to stop there, especially if your official response to it is, well, you know, it's over. We just have to get over it. We shouldn't whine about it. Now, the two theories, I can't tell you how many emails I've gotten on this thing, and from people on the left who are trying to figure out why people on the left would say, get over it. And the two categories of answers that I've gotten, and I just hope and pray that neither one of these are true. One of them is people saying, well, you know, the Democrats are just as corrupt as the Republicans, and if elections can be rigged, they're all in favor of that. They're just waiting for the day when they can rig them. And in fact, they used to rig them. I mean, the Jim Crow laws down in the South, ballot box stuffing in the South. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party was notorious for this in the era during Reconstruction, you know, after the Civil War, all the way up into the 1940s, 1950s, when the Democratic Party was the party of segregation. And yeah, it's true. So is the Democratic Party, are the big lights in the Democratic Party, the big names in the Democratic Party, are they refusing to discuss this because they figure, hey, you know, sooner or later, things go in cycles. Sooner or later, the American people are going to say enough already. They're going to throw out enough Republicans that will take back control of the House and the Senate. We'll take control of some of these states, and in those states, we'll rig the elections. We'll get George Soros to buy out Diebold, and then we'll rig the voting machines. We'll rig who can be on the polls. I mean, both Ohio and Florida now have passed laws that make it so hard to register a voter, that if you accidentally break the law by doing something wrong, like, for example, not going through a training course in every single one of the 80-plus counties in Ohio, you have to go to every county and get trained in how to register voters before you can legally say to somebody, would you like to sign up to vote? And if you fail to do that, you can go to prison. League of Women Voters down in Florida said, we're not registering voters anymore after 80 years in the business. Because the Republicans in Florida passed laws making it almost impossible to register new voters. Now, would that be because the Republicans don't want Republicans to register new voters? I don't think so. It's not about Republicans registering new voters. It's about the fact that the Republicans know that they are the minority. They are the right-wing cranks. And so the only way they can win elections is by suppressing the vote. They do that two ways. One, negative campaigning. Negative campaigning drives down voting numbers. And two, with these outright dirty tricks and law-breaking activity, like Robert F. Kennedy documents, gives evidence for in his Rolling Stone piece. As Paul Weyrich, who is now the big booster, Paul Weyrich is pushing the candidacy of Ken Blackwell for governor of Ohio because he thinks that Ken Blackwell could be the next vice president of the United States. Ken Blackwell, the guy who committed the crimes and stole the election for George W. Bush in 2004, according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Paul Weyrich, the guy who claims credit for putting Ronald Reagan in office. The original strategist, one of the founders of the Christian Coalition. Here's Paul Weyrich talking in a church about politics and, well, you know, what the Republicans are all about, basically.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So, number one, we've got the theory that Democrats are not speaking up about this because they figure their time will come and they can steal elections. Number two, I've got a whole bunch of emails from people saying that their theory is that what you're seeing is jockeying among major, large ego, large money, large power folks within the Democratic Party over who's going to run. And that if John Kerry, if it's demonstrated in a court of law or as a consequence of prosecutions in Ohio, if it's demonstrated that George W. Bush is not the legitimate president of the United States, that John Kerry and John Edwards actually won, then that means that John Kerry and or John Edwards would have a huge, I mean, they'd be catapulted to the front of the line in terms of moral authority to run in 2008. And there are people, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, others, who have already said they want to run in 2008. They really don't want John Kerry and John Edwards in the way. And in fact, they didn't want John Kerry and John Edwards to win in the first place because it was a strong ticket with two guys who could have done two sequential presidential. In other words, John Edwards was strong enough that he could have run for president and in fact had, which meant that they would tie it up for 16 years. 8 years of Kerry presidency, 8 years of an Edwards presidency, and by that time, you know, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and anybody else who might be seriously thinking about running for president as a Democrat right now would be too old to do so. And so they want this thing put to bed, and they didn't want them to win in the first place. That's why they advised Kerry to roll over right from the get-go. Who knows? 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. The lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. Hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote, now do you know where did my ballot go? Whoa, whoa.
There you go, welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Ben writes to me. He says, this is a copy of a letter I sent to the chairman of the Warren County, Iowa, Democratic Party Central Committee. I'm a member of that committee. The letter is self-explanatory. I also sent copies to various candidate campaigns and to the Iowa Secretary of State's office. He says, this makes me really sick. You can add this one to your voting machine alert collection. And Ben writes, Don, this is to Don Ruby, who's the chairman of the Warren County, Iowa, Democratic Party Central Committee. Don, I just voted on a Diebold paperless voting machine for the primary, the same Diebold and the same paperless voting machines that were likely used to steal the 2004 election from John Kerry in Ohio. A paperless voting machine with no way to do recounts because there's no paper trail. A paperless voting machine with secret proprietary software and hardware that no one is allowed to see. Paperless voting machines, which our country, which our county platform calls for the elimination of. I was not allowed at the Greenfield one precinct polling place to cast my vote on a paper ballot. Further, as far as I could tell, there were no Democrats sitting on the election board. At least there was no one there I recognized. Can someone tell me how and why the bloody hell this was allowed to happen? He says, I called Tracy and complained. She was very condescending in her response. She was not interested in seeing hard data on the subject, although she said she would look into why I was not allowed to cast a paper ballot. It's past time for her to be removed from office. With no auditable paper trail, I confidently expect a GOP sweep through Warren County in November. Why the hell should I bother to vote or do anything? This is not a resignation letter from the Central Committee, but I am extremely upset and angered by what I found in my polling place today. Has the party finally thrown in the towel? Have we decided that transparent, fair, honest elections are not worth the expense or effort? And have we decided that democratic government is no longer worth the expense or effort? Can someone answer any of these questions? Ben. His tagline at the bottom of the letter. Of course it hurts when you're being screwed by an elephant. Well, yeah, okay. Block the vote. This in today's New York Times. The editorial in today's New York Times. If ever there was a sign of a ruling party in trouble, it is a game plan that calls for trying to win by discouraging voting. The latest sign that Republicans have an election year strategy to shut down voter registration drives comes from Ohio. As the state gears up for a very competitive election season this fall, its Secretary of State, J. Kenneth Blackwell, has put in place, quote, emergency, unquote, regulations that could hit voter registration workers with criminal penalties for perfectly legitimate registration practices. The rules are so draconian they could shut down registration drives in Ohio. Mr. Blackwell, who also happens to be the Republican candidate for governor this year, has a history of this sort of behavior. In 2004, he instructed county boards of elections to reject any registrations on paper of less than 80-pound stock, about the thickness of a postcard. His order was almost certainly illegal, and he retracted it after he came under intense criticism. I would add he retracted it just before the election in time for it to have already done its damage. It was, however, in place long enough to get some registrations tossed out, says the New York Times. Back to the New York Times editorial today. This year, Mr. Blackwell's office has issued rules and materials that appear to require that paid registration workers and perhaps even volunteers personally take the forms they collect to an election office. Organizations that run registration drives generally have the people who register voters bring the forms back to supervisors who can then review them for errors. Under Mr. Blackwell's edict, everyone involved could be committing a crime. Mr. Blackwell's rules also appear to prohibit people who register from voters from sending the forms in by mail. That rule itself may violate federal elections law. Mr. Blackwell's rules are interpretations of a law the Republican-controlled Ohio legislature passed recently. Another of the nation's most famous swing states, Florida, has been the scene of similar consternation and confusion since it recently enacted a law that is so harsh that the Florida League of Women Voters announced that it was stopping all voter registration efforts for the first time in 67 years. Florida's legislature, like Ohio's, is controlled by Republicans. Throughout American history, both parties have shown a willingness to try to use election law to get results they might not otherwise win at the polls. But right now, it is clearly the Republicans who believe they have an interest in keeping the voter base small. This is the New York Times editorial today. Mr. Blackwell and other politicians who insist on making it harder to vote never say, of course, that they're worried that get-out-the-vote drives will bring too many poor minority voters in the system. They say instead they want to reduce fraud. However, there's virtually no evidence that registration drives are leading to fraud at the polls. There is one clear way that Ohio's election system is corrupt. Decisions about who can vote are being made by a candidate for governor. Mr. Blackwell should hand over responsibility for elections to a decision maker whose loyalty is to the voters and the law. Copyright 2006, the New York Times Company. Now, what I want to do over the course of the next half hour here on this program is just go through Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article in Rolling Stone magazine in which he lays out the theft of the vote in Ohio. I'm going to give you each one of his arguments. I'm going to lay out in front of you the evidence, and you can make up your own mind about whether somebody kicked in our door and stole our furniture and whether we ought to be mad as hell and whether we ought to be going down and saying, hey, give me back my damn furniture. And we should be calling the police and say, and throw this guy's butt in jail right now. Because I think we should. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown. Not the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone.
Indeed, it's the article in the Rolling Stone that's raising a lot of eyebrows, raising a lot of concern. If there's even a possibility that an election was stolen, especially the presidency of the United States, shouldn't we be looking into this thing? Shouldn't somebody be investigating? Shouldn't the Democratic Party be speaking out? Can you imagine what the Republicans would be doing right now if a Democrat had won in 2004, if John Kerry had won and there was evidence that he did it by stealing the vote, that he had rigged a state election? Can you imagine what the Republicans would be doing right now? It would be topic one on every talk show in America. Not just the right-wing talk shows. Wolf Blitzer would be talking about it. Tucker Carlson would be talking about it. Joe Scarborough would be talking. Well, I guess we're still going through the right-wing talk shows. You'd have Chris Matthews talking about. Are there any left-wing talk shows out there on television? No, apparently not. Yeah, that's right. Phil Donahue got thrown off TV for saying that the war was a bad idea. Well, in any case, yes, they would all be talking about it. ABC, NBC, CBS News, they'd be covering it. There'd be demonstrations. There'd be people. Here's what Robert Kennedy has to say. I'm going to share with you this just from the Rolling Stone article. And you can make up your own mind. How was the election stolen in 2004? Well, he actually rhetorically asked the question, was the 2004 election stolen? Nearly half, I'm quoting from Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., nearly half of the 6 million American voters living abroad never received their ballots. Now, keep in mind, people who live overseas are more likely to be liberal than conservative. They're more likely to vote Democratic than Republican. The single exception to that is the military, but in this election, 2004, even the military, the only county that we know of that where the military vote actually was made public was in South Carolina, and it went for John Kerry. So anyhow, back to Robert Kennedy. Nearly half of the 6 million American voters living abroad never received their ballots or received them too late to vote after the Pentagon unaccountably shut down a state-of-the-art website used to file overseas registrations. A consulting firm called Sproul & Associates, which was hired by the Republican National Committee to register voters in six battleground states, was discovered shredding Democratic registrations. In New Mexico, which was decided by 5,988 votes, that's 6,000 votes, malfunctioning machines mysteriously failed to properly register a presidential vote on more than 20,000 ballots. Nationwide, according to the Federal Commission charged with implementing election reforms, as many as 1 million ballots were spoiled by faulty voting equipment, roughly one of every 100 cast. Spoiled or stolen? Kennedy notes, especially disturbing was Ohio. A precinct in an evangelical church in Miami County, Ohio, recorded an impossibly high turnout of 98%, while a polling place in inner city Cleveland. Now, keep in mind, the 98% turnout, that was in Bush country. In Cleveland, inner city Cleveland, Kerry country, recorded an equally impossible turnout of only 7%. In Warren County, GOP election officials even invented a non-existent terrorist threat to bar the media from monitoring the official vote count. Most anomalous about the irregularities in 2004, you would think, if these were just irregularities, if these were just screw-ups, if these were just errors, if these were just mistakes, then half of them would fall to the benefit of Kerry, and half of them would fall to the benefit of Bush, right? I mean, if this was just random chance, machines don't always work, people don't always show up, power goes down, things get lost, of course you would expect it to be 50-50. But as Kennedy notes, almost without exception, they hurt John Kerry and benefited George Bush. At least 375,000 voters, the overwhelming majority of them Democratic, were prevented from casting ballots or did not have their votes counted in 2004. More than enough to shift the results of an election decided by 118,601 votes. In what may be the single most astonishing fact from the election, Robert Kennedy writes, one in every four Ohio citizens who registered to vote in 2004 showed up to the polls only to discover that they were not listed on the rolls, thanks to GOP efforts. Upwards of 80,000 votes, in addition to this, upwards of 80,000 votes for Kerry were counted instead for Bush. This is not evidence of election theft? Well, let's go through the details. First of all, the exit polls. Exit polls work. Exit polls are almost never wrong. As Dick Morris, yes, Fox News' Dick Morris, the guy who hung up on me when I was interviewing him, Dick Morris said, exit polls are almost never wrong. He points out they're so reliable, they're used as guides to the relative honesty of elections in third world countries. In fact, in Germany, exit polls have never been more than 0.3% off. Never. In 2003, vote tampering was revealed by exit polls in the Republic of Georgia. It forced Eduard Shevardnadze to step down. In November 2004, exit polling in the Ukraine, paid for by us, by the way, by the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the State Department, and Freedom House, Eleanor Roosevelt's organization, exposed election fraud that denied Viktor Yushchenko the presidency. And, in fact, the exit poll, writes Robert Kennedy, created for the 2004 election, was designed to be the most reliable voter survey in history. The sample that Ezin Matovsky created was six times larger than those normally used in national polls, driving the margin of error down to approximately plus or minus 1%. As the last polling stations closed on the West Coast, exit polls showed Kerry ahead in 10 of 11 battleground states, including commanding leads in Ohio and Florida, and winning by 1.5 million votes nationally. the most accurate exit polls in the history of the United States. Probably in the history of the world. They even showed Kerry breathing down Bush's neck in the supposed GOP strongholds of Virginia and North Carolina. But then something happened. As the official election results came in, we found what's called redshift. States that where the exit polls said John Kerry won, suddenly coming in for George Bush. In some cases, as much as 9.5% of a shift. That's one in every 10 votes. As Robert Kennedy writes, based on exit polls, CNN had predicted Kerry defeating Bush in Ohio by a margin of 4.2 percentage points. Instead, election results showed Bush winning the state by 2.5%. Bush also tallied 6.5% more than the polls had predicted in Pennsylvania and 4.9% more in Florida. This is impossible. That's me saying that, not Kennedy. Kennedy goes on, quoting one of the Stephen Freeman of the University of Pennsylvania, visiting scholar, statistician, expert on polls and elections. He says, the greatest disparities between exit polls and the official vote count came in Republican strongholds. In precincts where Bush received at least 80% of the vote, the exit polls were off by an average of 10%. By contrast, in precincts where Kerry dominated by 80% or more, the exit polls were accurate to within 0.3%, just like in Germany. A pattern, Robert Kennedy writes, that suggests Republican election officials stuffed the ballot box in Bush country. As Freeman says, when you look at the numbers, there's a tremendous amount of data that supports the supposition of election fraud. The discrepancies are higher in battleground states, higher where there are Republican governors, higher in states with greater proportions of African-American communities, and higher in states where there were the most Election Day complaints. All these are strong indicators of fraud. And yet this supposition has been utterly ignored by the press and, oddly, by the Democratic Party. Again, I have to ask the question, why? Why is the Democratic Party ignoring this? Is it because there are a few high-profile Democrats who want to run for president in 2008 and they think that this will mess things up if America discovers that John Kerry actually won the 2004 election? Could that be? Is it because the Democratic Party wants to get their hands on riggable voting machines themselves? Could that be? I cannot come up with an explanation. It can't be that they don't believe it's possible, because the evidence is so clear. Okay, let's just look at the details. The partisan official. Ohio has been the key to every Republican presidential victory since Lincoln. 49 times, Bush and Kerry both traveled to Ohio, more than any other state. Ken Blackwell, in charge of Ohio, he's the Secretary of State. He's also running for governor right now as a Republican. He was also the co-chair of the Bush campaign for Ohio. This shouldn't be. I mean, this is the same thing that Catherine Harris was doing in Florida, you recall. In January 2005, Robert Kennedy writes, John Conyers issued a detailed report that outlined, quote, massive and unprecedented voter irregularities and anomalies in Ohio, end quote. The problems, the report concludes, were caused by intentional misconduct and illegal behavior, much of it involving Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell. Kennedy goes on to say, Blackwell permitted election officials in Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Toledo. Now, these are cities that are predominantly Kerry cities, Democratic cities, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Toledo, to conduct a massive purge of their voter rolls, summarily expunging the names of more than 300,000 voters who had failed to cast votes in the previous two national elections. In Cleveland, which went 5-1 for Kerry, nearly one in four voters were wiped from the rolls between 2000 and 2004. Now, this, by the way, is illegal. He goes on to add, in Cleveland's Precinct 6C, where more than half the voters on the rolls were deleted, turnout was only 7.1%, the lowest in the state. He adds, if only 1 in 10 of the 300,000 purged voters showed up on Election Day, a conservative estimate, according to election scholars, that's 30,000 citizens who were unfairly denied the opportunity to cast ballots. Now, that's just the beginning. That's just the purge of the voter rolls. Next, we get to the strike force. The mighty Republican strike force showing up in Ohio. I'll tell you about that right after the break. It's 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's too late to fight. It's too late to change. You may be wrong for all I know, but you may be right.
And welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our question this hour and next hour. I'm going to get all. It's going to take 2 hours to go through this whole thing. I'm just going to walk you through all the evidence that Robert F. Kennedy lays out. And I know a lot of folks are on hold here, want to call into the program. We'll get to it in the next hour because this is the most important political story of in 200 years. I mean, nobody suggested that George Washington stole an election. Nobody suggested Thomas Jefferson stole an election, even though they had to re-poll it over and over and over again in the House of Representatives. Nobody suggested that John Adams stole an election or that his son John Quincy Adams stole an election. Name it. There has never been a president of the United States where there is credible evidence that he and his party, two elections in a row, stole an election. Until now. This is not something you get over. Somebody kicks in your front door, makes off with your furniture, your dog, and your wife, and you don't say, "Oh, gee, I think I'll just get off. I'll just get over it. I'll quit whining." No, you go down the street, you kick in their door, and you say, "I'm here to defend my family, to defend my property, defend my democracy, defend my nation." Okay, back to Robert Kennedy. Quote, this is from the piece in Rolling Stone. "To stem the tide of new registrations, the Republican National Committee and the Ohio Republican Party attempted to knock tens of thousands of predominantly minority and urban voters off the rolls through illegal mailings known in electioneering jargon as caging. During the 80s, after the GOP used such mailings to disenfranchise nearly 76,000 black voters in New Jersey and Louisiana, the GOP was forced to sign two separate court orders agreeing to abstain from caging. During the summer of 2004, the GOP targeted minority voters in Ohio by zip code, therefore by race, sending registered letters to more than 200,000 newly registered voters in 65 counties. On October 22nd, a mere 11 days before the election, Ohio Republican Party Chairman Bob Bennett, who also chairs the Board of Elections in Cuyahoga County, tried to invalidate the registrations of 35,427 voters who had refused to sign for the letters or whose mail came back as undeliverable. Almost half of the challenged voters were from Democratic strongholds in and around Cleveland." Now, who were these people whose letters, who didn't sign for their letters? People serving in the military, college students who are off at school. Over 1,000 homeless people. By law, each voter is supposed to receive a hearing before their name gets stripped off the rolls. Instead, writes Robert Kennedy, in the week before the election, kangaroo courts were rapidly set up across the state at Blackwell's direction that would inevitably disenfranchise thousands of voters at a time. A process that one Democratic election official in Toledo likened to an inquisition. Adding to the atmosphere of intimidation, sheriff's detectives in Sandusky County were dispatched to the homes of challenged voters to investigate the GOP's claims of fraud. Yeah, the white sheriff comes knocking on the door in the poor black neighborhood and says, "We're here to investigate election fraud." You think those folks are going to go vote? Robert Kennedy goes on to write, "On October 27th, ruling that the effort likely violated both the constitutional right to due process and the constitutional right to vote, U.S. District Judge Susan Lott put a halt to the GOP challenge." Right? A judge, a federal judge, U.S. District Court judge, says no to the Democrats, or to the Republicans, rather. "But not before tens of thousands of new voters received notices claiming that they were improperly registered. Some election officials in the states illegally ignored Lott's ruling, stripping hundreds of voters from the rolls. In Columbus and elsewhere, challenged registrants were never notified that the court had cleared them to vote. On October 29th, a federal judge found that the Republican Party had violated the court orders from the 80s that barred it from caging." What's that, 5 days before the election? "Hey, we caught you doing something wrong, but I guess it's already done." According to Conyers' report, a team, back to Robert Kennedy, a team of 25 GOP volunteers calling themselves the Mighty Texas Strike Force holed up at the Holiday Inn in Columbus a day before the election around the corner from the headquarters of the Ohio Republican Party, which paid for their hotel rooms. The men were overheard by a hotel worker, quote, using payphones to make intimidating calls to likely voters, end quote. They were threatening people with jail time if they cast their ballots. This was no freelance operation, writes Kennedy. The strike force, an offshoot of the Republican National Committee, was part of a team of more than 1,500 volunteers from Texas who were deployed to battleground states, usually in teams of 10. Their leader was Pat Oxford, a Houston lawyer who managed Bush's legal defense team in 2000 in Florida, where he warmly praised the efforts of a mob that stormed the Miami-Dade County election offices and halted the recount. You remember Florida? The state where Al Gore won, no matter how you count the ballots. But we didn't learn about it until a month after, 5 weeks after 9/11. And the New York Times, the Washington Post, other newspapers buried that fact 17 paragraphs into the article because they didn't want to call into question the legitimacy of George W. Bush right after 9/11. Well, I'm sorry, we're far enough after 9/11. I think it's time to be calling in a questioning the legitimacy of George W. Bush. Continuing with Robert Kennedy's article, and we're going to have to wrap this up in the next hour, but barriers, here are the categories. Barriers to registration. What Blackwell did to prevent Democrats from registering. The wrong pew. How people actually showed up and voted and their vote didn't get counted. And exactly how Blackwell engineered this thing to totally confuse and confound Democratic voters, but never Republican voters. Long lines. How this was actually an organized campaign to cause people to stand in line for hours and hours and hours if they wanted to vote. And the machines. We're going to lay out all the evidence in the next hour of this program as we continue. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 57 minutes past the hour. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You should be too, my friends. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. And maybe the Democratic ones, too. Tom Hartman here with you. Should we just say, oh, gee, they stole something from us. I guess we should get over it. Or should we say, hey, you know, looking around here, it looks like there's something missing. I want to know who took it. Especially if it's democracy that we're talking about. And we are. So we've been recapping Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s piece in Rolling Stone. At the same time today in the New York Times, the lead editorial in the New York Times today pointing out that in the last couple of months, the states of Ohio and Florida that you pretty much need to win if you're going to win the presidency, have made it, for all practical purposes, illegal to register new Democratic voters. At the same time that they've purged hundreds of thousands of Democratic voters off their lists illegally. In fact, Jeb Bush even signed a restraining order a couple of years ago saying he wouldn't do it anymore. And then he went ahead and did it anyway back in 2002. And now Ken Blackwell doing it. And it's all laid out here in this Rolling Stone piece, among other sources. So we had talked about the Texas Mighty Strike Force caging, sending postal mail out to people in minority areas and in areas that are heavily Democratic, telling them that, oh, gee, don't bother showing up because you're illegally registered, or you're not actually registered, or are you really registered? And then when they don't reply, just take them off, take their names off the rolls. This in violation of two court orders against the Republican Party saying don't do this, because they had done it back in the 1970s. Excuse me, the 1990s. Get the exact date here. They had done it in New Jersey and Louisiana. Oh, I don't have a date. Yeah. They were signed as, during the 80s, during the 1980s. In New Jersey and Louisiana, the GOP was doing this, and they were forced to sign a court order saying they would no longer do it, which is still in effect. They did it anyway in Ohio. They broke the law. They broke the law. They're not denying that they broke the law. What they're saying is, get over it. Question in my mind, why are people on our side saying, get over it? I can't figure it out. Here's a just one sample of the many emails I get with theories about it. I have a theory why this person writes. They're talking about some organizations on the left would question Bobby Kennedy's piece in Rolling Stone, or for that matter would say that we shouldn't bother, that we should just get over it. Sharon writes that most of the people saying this want to work on the Clinton campaign. She says these Clinton people, including those who were Kerry advisors at the end of his campaign, who advised him to concede immediately, even before Ohio could be investigated, are Hillary proponents. They did not want Kerry to be elected. That would have put off a bid by her for 8 years, if at all, since Edwards, as a successful VP, would have had first shot in 2008. I do not believe that they want any real and legal upset of Bush. He plays the perfect buffoon to Hillary's benefit. Kerry Edwards would have been obstacles in her way. Well, that's one theory. You could say the same thing about Joe Biden. You could say the same thing about Evan Bayh. I'd say pretty much, arguably, you could say the same thing about Howard Dean. Why are the Democrats not speaking up? I guarantee you, if the Republicans had any evidence that Democrats were stealing elections, they would be absolutely raising holy hell. And I can tell you from personal experience, I live, less than 40 miles from the border of Washington State, where that's exactly what happened in the last election. The Republicans thought that Dino Rossi thought that Christine Gregoire had stolen the election and absolutely raised hell. And they recounted and they recounted and they recounted, and there was lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, and newspaper stories and TV and radio, and everybody was all freaked out for months about that thing. And it turned out it was just a tight race, and the Democrat actually won. They didn't even have any evidence of criminal wrongdoing. They just had a tight race that they thought maybe they could win by raising all kinds of hell in the media. Well, here you've got actual evidence of criminal wrongdoing. Why are the Democrats so silent on this? Why is there even one Democrat, one liberal in the world who would say, oh, just get over it? You don't want to sound like a whiner, do you? I would say to that person, oh, great. Well, I'm glad to know you think that way. Next week, I'll come over to your house. I'll kick in the front door. I'll steal everything you've got. And when you start complaining about it, I'll say, oh, hey, get over it. Don't be a whiner. Give me a break. Okay, barriers to registration. Moving along with Robert F. Kennedy's piece here in Rolling Stone magazine. Blackwell announced on September 7th, less than a month before the filing deadline, that election officials, this is to register to vote, that election officials would process registration forms only if they were printed on 80-pound unwaxed white paper stock. That's basically the kind of paper that you make a postcard out of. Blackwell's order also applied to registrations delivered in person to election offices. He further specified that any valid registration cards printed on lesser paper stock that miraculously survived the shredding gauntlet at the post office were not to be processed. Instead, they were to be treated as applications for a registration form, requiring election boards to send out a brand new card. You get this? So, Here's the problem. This, first of all, this clearly violated the Voting Rights Act. This was a criminal act by Ken Blackwell. The evidence for it is right here in the Rolling Stone magazine, and Blackwell is not disputing it. It's just that nobody has been able to prosecute him because he lives in a state where the attorney general is also a Republican who would have to prosecute it. And the federal government. I mean, you could have a federal prosecutor go in, but you think the Bush administration is going to do that? You think Alberto Gonzalez is going to send a federal prosecutor into Ohio? Somehow I don't think so. Now, here's where it gets really weird. The decision immediately threw registration efforts into chaos. Local newspapers that had printed registration forms in their pages saw their efforts invalidated. Delaware County, Ohio, posted a notice online saying it could no longer accept its own voter registration forms. Even Blackwell's own registration forms on lighter weight paper were illegal under his rule. So you fill out the thing in the newspaper, or you fill out the thing that you got from the Democratic Party, and you send it in, and they send it, and they say, okay, this is illegal. They throw it away. And if they don't throw it away, then they say, oh, this is an application for registration, not a registration, because it's not on the 80 pounds cardstock. And so they send you back a new registration form. You get a new registration form in the mail, and you go, oh, a new registration form. I already registered. I don't need to fill this out. When this got publicized and Democrats threatened court action on September 28th, Blackwell said, okay, I give. But that was only 6 days before the registration deadline. The damage was already done. As Robert Kennedy writes, according to a statistical analysis conducted in May by the nonpartisan Greater Cleveland Voter Coalition, 16,000 voters in and around that city were disenfranchised. Another 15,000 lost the right to vote due to largely inconsequential omissions on their registration card. Statewide, the study concludes, a total of 72,000 voters were disenfranchised through avoidable registration errors, 1% of all voters in an election decided by barely 2% of all voters. Blackwell authorized only one investigation of registration errors. Only one. Who did this investigation? Tom Noe. Is it Noe or No? N-O-E. I think it's Noe. Tom Noe's wife. He's the guy who got busted for embezzling state funds and illegally laundering $45,000 for the Bush campaign. His wife, Bernadette Noe, she's the one who conducted, who chaired the County Board of Elections and the County Republican Party. State investigators who investigated the elections operation in Toledo, writes Kennedy, discovered areas of grave concern. With less than a month to go before the election, Bernadette Noe and her board had yet to process 20,000 voter registration cards. Board officials arbitrarily decided that mail-in cards, mostly from the Republican suburbs, would be processed first, while registrations dropped off at the board's office. The result of intensive Democratic registration drives in the city would be processed last. When a grassroots group called Project Vote delivered a batch of nearly 10,000 cards just before the October 4th deadline, an election official casually remarked, "We may not get to them." 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman radio program broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, 21 minutes past the hour. The most troubling incident, Robert Kennedy writes in his article in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, was the 2004 election stolen. The most troubling incident uncovered by the investigation, this is the single investigation that happened, it was authorized by Ken Blackwell, into election errors in Ohio, was Noe's decision, Bernadette Noe, the wife of Tom Noe, the Republican who has been busted for illegally laundering $45,400 to the Bush campaign. was her decision to allow Republican partisans behind the counter in the Board of Elections office to make photocopies of postcards sent to confirm voter registrations. Now, why would that be a bad thing? Because once they have those copies of the postcards sent to confirm voter registrations, the GOP can continue with their caging operations, purging people from the polls in a way that is a violation of a court order that goes back to the 1980s. Two court orders, actually, against the Republican Party. Keep in mind, the Republican Party is operating under two court orders preventing them from continuing to engage in illegal election activities that they were engaging in the 1980s during the Reagan administration. In April 2005, Noe and the entire Board of Elections were forced to resign, but once again the damage was done. It was a little after the election, you see. At a Victory 2004 rally held in Toledo 4 days before the election, President Bush himself singled out a pair of grassroots activists for special praise. I want to thank my friends Bernadette Noe and Tom Noe for their leadership in Lucas County. Yeah. Okay, here's strategy number five that the Republicans used to steal the election in 2004 in Ohio. As Robert Kennedy writes, in one of his most effective maneuvers, Blackwell prevented thousands of voters from receiving provisional ballots on election day. Blackwell illegally decreed that poll workers should make on-the-spot judgments as to whether or not a voter lived in a precinct and only give provisional ballots to those that that particular poll worker at that particular point on that spot decided that person was eligible. That is against the law. The law says if somebody shows up and says, I'm registered to vote, and you can't find them on the list, you have to give them a provisional ballot. They fill it out, they put their name and all their information on there, and then you check it later to see if they're actually registered or not. But Blackwell said, no, you can look them up. If they're not on the list, you can decide whether or not you're going to give them a ballot. Federal Judge James Carr, when he learned about this, was so furious that he wrote in his decision. Now, this was too late to count because Blackwell got away with it. But he said, by not even mentioning this group, the primary beneficiaries of HAVA's provisional voting provisions, that is, people who get absentee ballots, or provisional ballots, excuse me, Blackwell apparently seeks to accomplish the same result in Ohio in 2004 that occurred in Florida in 2000. That's a federal judge saying that. From the bench. But even then, even after a federal judge says that, Blackwell still won't follow the law. As Kennedy writes, but instead of complying with the judge's order to expand provisional balloting, Blackwell insisted that Carr, the federal judge, was usurping his power, Blackwell's power, as Secretary of State, and made a speech in which he compared himself to Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and the Apostle Paul, saying that Blackwell himself would rather go to jail than follow federal law. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Judge Carr's ruling on October 23rd, but the confusion over the issue still caused untold numbers of voters across the state to be illegally turned away at the polls on Election Day without being offered provisional ballots. A federal judge also invalidated a decree by Blackwell that denied provisional ballots to absentee voters who were never sent their ballots in the mail, but that ruling did not come down until 3 p.m. on the day of the election. Additionally, Blackwell decided to toss out the ballots of anyone who showed up at the wrong precinct, a move guaranteed to disenfranchise Democrats who lived in densely populated urban areas crowded with multiple polling places. In other words, you show up, normally you vote at the school down the street from you. Well, what Blackwell did just before the election is in those Democratic strongholds, particularly in the cities, in Toledo and Cincinnati and Cleveland, he scrambled them. He changed all the precincts all around. So now instead of voting at that school down the street, you're supposed to vote at the fire station 5 blocks down in the other direction. So you go to the school where you normally vote, and they let you vote. And then after you leave, Blackwell says, hey, check and see if they voted in the right precinct. If you voted in the wrong precinct, throw out your ballot. The decision left hundreds of thousands, quoting from Robert Kennedy now, the decision left hundreds of thousands of voters in predominantly Democratic counties to navigate the state's bewildering array of 11,366 precincts whose boundaries had just been redrawn prior to the election. To further compound their confusion, the new precinct lines were misidentified on the Secretary of State's own website. Many voters, out of habit, reported to polling stations that were no longer theirs. Some were mistakenly assured by poll worker on the ground that they were entitled to cast a provisional ballot at that precinct. Instead, thanks to Blackwell's ruling, at least 10,000 provisional votes were tossed out after Election Day simply because citizens wound up in the wrong line. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
This is your one. You got to run.
And welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. helping us escape the matrix of the theft of the 2004 election. Now, keep in mind, we know that the 2000 election was stolen. We know that. Right? We got that. We figured that out. And it's not like, you know, a bunch of conspiracy nuts sat around and said, hey, let's figure this thing out. No, the New York Times figured that out. The New York Times, in fact, pointed out, and you can find the link to this article. Whenever I talk about this in the air, people say, well, all right, send me the article. You can find a link. Go to commondreams.org. You'll see the, or tomhartman.com. Click articles on democracy. It's the top article. You'll see the most recent article I wrote. It's called Stand Up for Democracy with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And in there is a link right to the New York Times site. The New York Times found that in Florida, in 2000, no matter what, if there was a statewide recount, which is what the Florida Supreme Court had ordered and what caused John Roberts and George W. Bush to sue before the Supreme Court, before Justice Rehnquist, to stop the election, to stop the count in Florida, because it would cause, quote, irreparable harm to George W. Bush, end quote. This is in 2000. When they actually counted the vote, this consortium, including the New York Times, when they actually counted the vote, they found that if you counted every vote in the state, Al Gore won the state. Quote, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent, end quote. They further found that Florida law requires that if you know the intent, if you can determine the intent of the voter by looking at the ballot, you have to count that ballot. So if somebody punches the hole for Al Gore and then they write Al Gore on the right-hand candidate line, or if somebody punches the hole for George Bush and writes George Bush in the candidate line, I think you can safely say you know the intent of the voter. Well, there were 35,176 people who punched the George Bush hole and wrote in George Bush. There were 80,775 people who punched the Al Gore hole and wrote in Al Gore. 80,000 Al Gore, 35,000 George Bush. Catherine Harris, and Jeb Bush decided that those ballots were spoiled and would not be counted. A clear violation of Florida law. The 2000 election was stolen. It was reported in the New York Times on November 12, 2001. This is not conspiracy theory stuff. You can read it in the newspaper. And now it's happened again. Again using illegal techniques. And I'm sorry, the New York Times made the call to bury that fact in the 17th paragraph of the article and to run a headline that implied that actually the election was not stolen because 9/11 had happened 5 weeks before and they didn't want to question the legitimacy of George Bush in a time of national crisis. I understand that. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. They made that decision. This time we can't make that decision. This time we can't say, oh, well, we're just going to let them get away with it because it's a national crisis right now. Because a large chunk of the national crisis right now is the fact that these guys who stole the election are using our federal offices to wage an illegal war, to spy on us. And so anyway, back to Bobby Kennedy's piece here. I want to wrap this thing up in the second hour. In Toledo, Brandy and Brittany Stenson, this is from Robert Kennedy, each got in a different line to vote in a gym at St. Elizabeth Seton School. This is how bad it is. Ken Blackwell ruled that if you were in the wrong precinct, your vote didn't count, even if you voted. And you could have two precincts in one school building. So here you have Brandy and Brittany Stenson, each got in a different line to vote in the gym at St. Seton School. Both of the sisters were registered to vote at the polling place in the city's north side in the shadow of the giant Daimler Chrysler plant. Both cast ballots. But when the tallies were added up later, the family resemblance came to an abrupt end. Brittany's vote was counted, but Brandy's wasn't. She was in the right building. But according to Blackwell's ruling, if she had wanted her vote to count, she should have chosen the line that led to her assigned table. Her ballot, along with those of her mother, her brother, and 37 other voters in the same precinct, were thrown out simply because they were, in the words of Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones, Democrat of Ohio, quote, in the right church but in the wrong pew, end quote. All told, writes Robert Kennedy, the deliberate chaos that resulted from Blackwell's registration barriers did the trick. Black voters in the state who went overwhelmingly for Kerry were 20% more likely than whites to be forced to cast a provisional ballot. In the end, nearly 3% of all voters in Ohio were forced to vote provisionally, and more than 35,000 of their ballots were ultimately rejected. They chose the wrong line. And you think an election wasn't stolen? And then it gets even worse. Item number six, long lines. In inner-city precincts in Columbus, Cleveland, and Toledo, which were voting for Kerry by margins of 90% or more, people often waited up to 7 hours to vote. At liberal Kenyon College, students were forced to stand in line for 11 hours before being allowed to vote, with the last voters casting their ballots after 3 o'clock in the morning. These long lines, Robert Kennedy writes, were not only foreseeable, they were actually created by GOP efforts. They slashed the number of voting machines in Democratic areas. Republican officials also created long lines by failing to distribute enough voting machines to inner-city precincts. On the other hand, in Republican areas, they got plenty of machines. He goes on to point out, in Columbus, which had registered 125,000 new voters, more than half of them black, the Board of Elections estimated that it would need 5,000 machines to handle the huge surge. But Matt Damschroeder, the Republican who Robert Kennedy last night told me he thinks should be prosecuted, chairman of the Franklin County Board of Elections and the former head of the Republican Party in Columbus, instead of buying more equipment, he, quote, decided to make do with 2,741 machines. And to make matters worse, writes Robert Kennedy, he favored his own party in distributing the equipment. According to the Columbus Dispatch, precincts that had gone 70% or more for Al Gore in 2000 were allocated 17 fewer machines in 2004, while strong GOP precincts received 8 additional machines. The result, writes Robert Kennedy, was utterly predictable. As day stretched into evening, U.S. District Judge Algernon Marbley issued a temporary restraining order requiring that voters be offered paper ballots. This is instead of standing in line for 12 hours. But it was too late. According to bipartisan estimates published in the Washington Post, as many as 15,000 voters in Columbus had already given up and gone home. In another move certain to add to the traffic jam at the polls, writes Robert Kennedy in the Rolling Stone magazine, the GOP deployed 3,600 operatives on election day to challenge voters in 31 counties, most of them in predominantly black and urban areas. Republican bullies at the polls. In Hamilton County, he writes, 14% of new voters in white areas would be confronted at the polls, compared to 97% of new voters in black areas. It's the same crime that was committed in Florida, voting while black, right, that the Republicans are trying to stop. Got to stop this crime, voting while black. Faulty machines, number seven. Only 800,000 out of the 5.6 million votes in Ohio were cast on electronic voting machines, but they were plagued with errors. In heavily Democratic areas around Youngstown, where nearly 100 voters reported, there's over 100 people came forward. Think of how many people it happened to who never came forward or didn't notice it, where nearly 100 voters reported entering Kerry on the touchscreen and watching the Bush light up. At least 20 machines had to be recalibrated in the middle of the vote process for chronically flipping Kerry votes to Bush. None were flipping Bush votes to Kerry. This was not a random mistake. That's me saying that, not Robert Kennedy. He says similar vote hopping from Kerry to Bush was reported by voters and election officials in other states. Elsewhere, voters complained in sworn affidavits, quoting Robert Kennedy now, that they touched Kerry's name on the screen and it lit up, but that the light had gone out by the time they finished their ballot. The Kerry vote faded away. In the state's most notorious incident, an electronic machine at a fundamentalist church in the town of Gahanna recorded a total of 4,258 votes for Bush and 260 votes for Kerry. However, in that precinct, there are only 800 registered voters. In fact, he says some 95,000 ballots in Ohio recorded no vote for president at all. That would mean that at least 66,000 voters were invalidated by faulty voting equipment. If counted by hand instead of by automatic tabulator, the vast majority of these votes would have been discernible. The 95,000, most of them who had no vote for president, were on punch card machines. He goes on to say most of the uncounted ballots occurred in Ohio's big cities. Gee, what a surprise. That's where Kerry's stronghold was. In addition to spoiling ballots, the punch card machines also created bizarre miscounts known as ballot crawl. In Cleveland Precinct 4F, a heavily African-American precinct, Constitution Party, Michael Perotka, was credited with an impressive 41% of the vote. In Precinct 4N, where Al Gore won 98% in 2000, Libertarian Party candidate Michael Badnarik was credited with 33% of the vote. And it's not just third-party candidates. Ballot crawl in Cleveland also shifted votes from Kerry to Bush in Precinct 13B, where Bush received only 6 votes in 2000. He was credited with 20% of the total in 2004. I'll tell you how you do this with these punch card, and this is, everybody knows this, with the punch card things you want to screw it up, you just drop a paperclip down into it. Everything gets offset a little bit. If you know it's a district that's going to mostly vote for Kerry, you just screw it up, just drop the paperclip in. They did it in Ohio, they did it in Florida. I'm telling you, 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's good to be king, have your own way, get a feeling of peace. At the end of the day, when your bulldog barks and your canary sings, you're out there with me. It's good to be king.
Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. There's still two more sections to this Kennedy piece. Rural counties. He goes through and he shows how in the rural counties, it looks like you had... It looks like Kerry, they just stuffed the ballot box and Kerry got ripped off. As many as 70,000 votes for John Kerry simply got flipped over to George W. Bush. They were literally stuffing the ballot boxes. And the evidence of that, the main evidence of that, this is probably the weakest part of his argument. The main evidence of that is that if you look at other races down the ballot, the Democratic candidates or Democratic, known Democrats who were running in nonpartisan races like the Supreme Court races, where they did fairly well, the ratio in the big cities, the ratio of those candidates, those other Democrats to Kerry, held up. In other words, you get a lot of Kerry votes, you also get a lot of votes for the other Democrats. But in the rural areas, you get a lot of votes for the other Democrats, no votes for Kerry, or very few, which is strong evidence that those votes got flipped over to Bush. And in fact, if you're going to stuff the ballot box, it makes the most sense to stuff it in Republican areas. Nobody's going to be looking. And then also rigging the recount. And we've talked with Bob Fitrakis on this program before about how the recount in Ohio is rigged. It's something we've talked about many times. And you want a specific and clear crime? The rigging of the recount, specific and clear crime. No two ways about it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Patricia in Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC. Hey, Patricia.
Hey, Tom. Tom, you're probably aware yesterday was California's primary election.
Indeed.
And though, you know, I don't want to sound negative, though we had some very good Democratic candidates win yesterday, for example, Deborah Bowen for Secretary of State.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I was real excited about that. And, you know, we had a lot of good candidates win, but the thing that was very disappointing was, I don't know if you're familiar with Mr. Richard Pombo.
Yeah, I am. We've talked about him on this program. Pete McCloskey, the old Republican, was running against him.
Yes, and I couldn't believe, I think Pombo got like 65 or 68% of the Republican vote. And this is the same guy who had Dick Cheney, who's got, what, a 22% approval rating in the United States. Yeah, campaign for him here. And I just, you know, and I was looking at McCloskey last night. He made a statement, Tom, and he said, 20 years ago when he was in Congress, he said there was a different breed of Republicans. And his thing for running was because he wants to restore some type of honesty back to the Republican Party, because he feels the party today is just corrupt and fraud. You know, it's just lies, everything. And he just did a short speech, you know, and it was just so disappointing to see a good, honest Republican running against a corrupt one, and Republicans still voting for the corrupt one. It just amazes me, Tom.
Well, that's the Republican Party today. It's run like a mob family. It's run like organized crime.
Well, you know, it is, but the thing is, when you are, forget about just California, but in general, citizen of this country, after Katrina, I mean, this was something that happened at home. It didn't happen in a foreign country, Tom. I think this is what upsets me. How can you possibly still support Bush after you, it's been a year now, and the people I talk to still live in Louisiana, you know what they're telling me? It looks the same. Nothing.
Oh, I know. It's an absolute disaster. And Patricia, you know, thank you for the call, and thank you for pointing that out. And I would say, you know, in the Pombo case, I don't know that they're supporting Bush. I think they're supporting Pombo. And it's because he's bringing home the bacon, or maybe because he knows the guy who can rig the voting machines. Who knows? The question we have to ask every state is, prove to me that my vote actually counted. And if they're using electronic voting machines, they can't prove it. Mike in Burien, Washington. Hey, Mike.
How you doing, Tom?
Good. Did I mispronounce your city?
Would you say Burien?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you got it right.
Oh, okay. What's up?
Well, basically, you know, your earlier argument, you know, everybody says, well, get over it, you lost. No, that's not the case. The case is, we won. You stole it. Get over it.
Right. Yeah. That's the title of one of the chapters in Greg Palast's new book, Armed Madhouse. The chapter is called Carry One, Get Over It.
It's just
that simple. And you know, he lays out essentially the same evidence that Robert Kennedy does. Robert Kennedy didn't do an enormous amount of original research on this. He just pulled it all together in a very nice, clean way that's readable, and then fact-checked much of it, threw out some of the stuff that was flaky, and just included the stuff that was absolutely bulletproof.
Sure.
And here it is. And I'm telling you, somebody kicks in the front door of your house and walks off with your furniture, and, you know, are you going to listen to somebody who says, hey, just get over it? I'm sorry.
It's lunacy.
That's right. Theft is theft. I'm sorry. You don't get over it. You get you clean it up. You get even. You whatever. But you don't get over it.
Well, you know, Ed Schultz is one of those crackpots.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go there, Mike. I'm not gonna get into other talk show hosts. Amy's in San Diego. Hey, Amy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was wondering. I think the reason that the Dems are not standing up and speaking out is because our party is ruled by those GLC Dems. And I think we need to get them out of our party. Like, we got rid of the Dixiecrats in the 60s that didn't want to go along with civil rights, and they moved to the Republican. I think we need to move them out of our party.
Yep. It's time to say to Evan Bayh, time to say to Joe Lieberman, it's time to say to these guys, see you later, Charles.
Right. Stop calling yourself Democrats. That they are no way a Democrat.
Well, and in fact, the DLC...
Very tiny issues they are.
Yeah, and Evan Bayh a couple days ago, I don't remember if it was an op-ed or if it was he was being interviewed or whatever, but he was going on and on about how there's an effort to purge the Democratic Party. They're trying to make us all politically correct. They're trying to, you know, create a lockstep. No, we just want the Democratic Party back. Thank you very much.
Exactly, right.
You know, yeah.
Thanks,
Amy,
Tom.
Thanks a lot for the call. Donald in Elk Grove, California. Hey, Donald, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I think it comes down to two things. It comes down to apathy, and it comes down to people being afraid of being liberal to conspiracy nuts.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, but I really don't think so. I think it comes down to, number one, the political party, for whatever reason, not wanting to talk about this stuff. And why? And number two, the media not being willing to talk about it because they're wired in with the power structure, and right now the power structure is Republican. And I really think it just boils down to those two very simple things. We'll take a break from this topic for a short while here. I'm going to talk to Larry Scott with VAWatchdog.org and others in just a moment. 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in Little Beirut, as George Bush Sr. refers to Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartman with you. David Sirota is on the line with us. He's the author of Hostile Takeover and a progressive blogger. DavidSirota.com is website. Hostile Takeover, an absolutely amazing book. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. In Montana, we just saw now what happens, what can happen when a progressive Democrat goes up against a machine Democrat. Or am I exaggerating this?
No, I wouldn't call him a machine Democrat. I would call him more of a sort of a
officially endorsed.
Morrison was a guy who was a little too slick by half, a little too much of a politician. Didn't take strong stands. I think he listened a little bit too much to Washington, and he didn't just get beat. He got destroyed. I mean, he got crushed.
Right, by John Tester, who's been a guest on this program as part of our Take Back America series. And so tell us about John Tester and his positions for those listeners who may not have heard our interview with him, and why he crushed his Democratic opponent in the primary.
Well, Tester took a very strong positions on the war, against corporate written trade deals. He came out and said that we need serious systemic and structural reforms to our healthcare system. And on each of those issues and a couple others, his opponent didn't really take a position at all. And we should let the audience know that his opponent was a twice statewide elected guy who had raised, if not double, then almost double the amount of money that Tester had raised and spent, far outspent Tester on television ads, and yet Tester won 61-35. Tester was considered the underdog the entire time. He's a farmer from Big Sandy, which is a very rural part of Montana. He was the state Senate president, and people basically wrote him off. Too much of a populist, didn't look like a politician, was going to get outspent, and he ended up, again, really destroying the front runner.
It seems to me, David Sirota, that we're seeing a real significant change, at least within the Democratic Party in the United States. And I would say, frankly, to some extent, this is even happening inside the Republican Party, particularly around the issue of immigration. But a move back to populism, to the idea of standing up for the people as opposed to giant government or corporate interests.
Yeah, and I think that's really what we're seeing. I think that, you know, as I wrote last night on my blog, which is www.davidsirota.com, I wrote that that this is in many ways a vindication of the Schweitzer model. Governor Brian Schweitzer, who I worked for in 2004 and in 2000 when he ran as an unabashed progressive populist standing up to big money interests. And, you know, people had said, well, it's just a fluke, and, you know, Schweitzer was, you know, it was just the force of his personality. And look, Brian does have a big personality, but I think that what we've seen in the Tester victory is a validation that is what people want. That people want their politicians. They're thirsty for politicians who are willing to stand up to big money interests, who are willing to take strong positions, who are willing to reject Washington's advice, and who are really willing to make serious, courageous runs for the right reasons.
David Sirota, you're a really thoughtful and insightful observer of the political scene. I have a lot of respect for your perspective. I'm curious. This is kind of out of left field. I hope that's okay.
That's okay.
In November of 2001, November 12th of 2001, the New York Times published an article pointing out that in the Florida election, there were about 30,000 ballots more where people had punched the name Al Gore and then written Al Gore on them than there were ballots where people had punched the name George Bush and written George Bush on them. And Florida state law requires ballots where the intent of the voter can be determined to be counted. And yet Katherine Harris and Jeb Bush chose not to count those. It would have given Al Gore a 35,000 vote election lead. In fact, the New York Times said when they counted all the ballots, by any measure, Al Gore won Florida in a full statewide recount. They buried that, though, in the 17th paragraph in the story on November 12, 2001 of the New York Times, because the editor's letter said they didn't want to undermine the legitimacy of Bush right after 9/11. Now we have, so, you know, it's a fairly solid, well-documented fact that the 2000 election was stolen, mm-hmm. I think we could say. Now we have this piece by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in Rolling Stone. I've just gone through it over the last 2 hours in this program in detail. I've talked with him a couple of times about it. We've had other people on the program. And there are voices out there in the Democratic Party, and they seem to be primarily the DLC wing of the Democratic Party. In fact, in large part, perhaps the most visible of the Democratic candidates, the Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton crowd, who are saying, we really don't want to revisit this. And I'm trying to figure out why. Do you have any thoughts on why that may be?
It's a tough question. I think that there is a part... a school of thought that said, let's focus on writing what we can write right now, seizing power right now. I think that there's it's not an entirely irrational school of thought, as long as we can actually be confident that those kinds of shenanigans won't happen again. And in other words, I think there's value in trying to figure out what happened and making sure that what happened never happens again. I'm not sure that there's as much value as trying to potentially, I don't even know if you can, to potentially overturn what has already happened.
Yeah, so, I don't think anybody's suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is that there's an editorial in today's New York Times about how Florida and Ohio have both now, under the Republican-controlled legislatures with Republican governments, they have both passed laws that make it so difficult to register voters that in the League of Florida, women voters in Florida has stopped registering people. They're
right,
afraid of being prosecuted.
That's a major issue.
So what I'm saying is 2000 was stolen. The same techniques were used in 2004, only much more massively in Ohio than they were used in Florida. And so there's all this evidence that, you know, this theft is not only ongoing, but the Republican Party has turned it into an institution. Shouldn't we be kicking their ass over this?
I think absolutely. There's a lot of obstacles to putting this front and center. You know, the media, I think, as you well noted, is not particularly interested in covering this. So, in other words, I think what I'm really saying is that I don't think that we're going to get very much traction in the media, no matter whether our high-profile leaders try to put this central or not. What I think we need to do is focus on the work that goes under the radar, the actual work on the ground to make sure that this doesn't happen in these states. That's a little less glamorous, obviously. It's going to get a lot less headlines. But
do you see that being done by the Democratic Party?
You know,
I don't see that being done either.
I don't necessarily see it being done by the Democratic Party, but as I've been telling people as I travel across the country for my book, I think a lot of really tremendous work is happening outside the Democratic Party. I think that you know, the conservative movement has seen the Republican Party as a means to an end, and I think the Progressive Party is starting to see the Democratic Party as a means to an end, as opposed to previously as seeing it as just an end. And so I think that there's a lot of running room for progressive grassroots organizations to really hoe the road in this area and in many other areas, and basically force the Democratic Party and the politicians in the Democratic Party to respond.
We're talking to David Sirota, the author of Hostile Takeover. His website, davidsirota.com. David, we have about a minute or so left here. I'm this John Tester win is just absolutely marvelous. Are you seeing? I saw the same. You know, you saw the same thing with Bernie Sanders. I mean, for years, are we seeing in the Democratic Party an emergence of more populist, more progressive candidates? At what point is the timidity going to go away?
I think we are. I think this is just another example of showing that populist politics is making a resurgence, and it's not just making a resurgence because it's the moral and the right kind of politics to pursue, but it's also we're seeing that it's politically viable. It's a political weapon. That populism is actually has gone from just being seen as something as sort of pie in the sky, only for idealists, to something that can actually be wielded effectively in the political arena, in the electoral arena, and that's why I think that the Tester victory, as I said, is going to send reverberations and shockwaves through the Washington establishment, because now it's not just idealism, now it's a way to win elections.
From your lips to God's ears. David Sirota, author of Hostile Takeover, davidsirota.com, the website. David, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great work you're doing. Keep it up. It's 16 minutes past the hour. After the break, Larry Scott of VAWatchdog.org will give us the latest on the VA data heist and other things, veterans. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Every breath you take, every call you make, every bite of steak, for our nation's sake, we'll be watching you.
Oh, it's the NSA song.
Every single day. We'll check your dossier. We see where you pray, what you buy, what you pay, because we're watching you. Oh, can't you see? It's called security. You've got to trust us too, because we don't trust you.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Yeah, it's the official Bush administration song. Larry Scott is with us. He's the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org. Larry, welcome to the program.
Well, good to be with you again, Tom. And the song just inspired me to get out my copy of the Patriot Act and read it once again.
There you go. I think what we need to be getting out our copies of is the Constitution.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
Yeah. Now, the VA data heist, this thing for veterans, and of course, your website, one of the premier websites for anybody who's ever served in our military, in our armed forces, the place to go for information, VAWatchdog.org. You have a number of takes on this, issues, blogs, discussions, news articles, whatnot. One that intrigues me the most, the VA data heist. Why this and why now? Why?
Well, there's a lot of talk going around, and this is really coming from VA insiders. These are people who actually work in what they call VACO, the VACO, VA Central Office, and there's a lot of information flying back and forth. And the general theory is that this really plays into the hands of the people who've been wanting to centralize the IT, or the information technology functions at the VA. This was tried last year. Representative Steve Booyer, who is the chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, pushed in a chief information officer by the name of Robert McFarland. McFarland had been an executive with Dell Computer. He had sold millions of Dell computers to the United States government. As a matter of fact, the government is the biggest customer of Dell computers. And immediately after McFarland was put in, they worked on what they call the strong CIO principle. They wanted to give McFarland about a $2.2 billion budget and to pull all of the various VA agencies. You know, you have cemeteries, you have benefits, you have health care, you have pensions, you have the home loans. All of those different departments inside the VA have been designing their own specialized software over the years and maintaining it accordingly because the software is so specialized. They have specialized needs. The concept was give McFarland complete control of this, and immediately the big scare went up inside the VA. The people in these various sub-agencies said, no, wait a minute. This man's a political appointee. He comes from the commercial world. He's got strong ties to the commercial software sector, and here goes everything. They're going to take it and hand it all over to the commercial software and the commercial hardware vendors. This now is going to give Steve Booyer and the people inside the VA who want this to happen a perfect excuse to bring back the strong chief information officer, give one person total control of this huge budget, and completely centralize all the computer programs, all software, all hardware, all personnel under one person who is a political appointee.
If it wasn't the Republicans and they weren't planning on privatizing it, it actually seems like there might be some logic to that, Larry Scott.
There is in what there should be a strong overseer. There should be strong oversight. But each of the departments have such specialized needs, Tom, that it really is more beneficial for them to provide their own information technology operations and develop their own software, because the software is so different and does such different things. And so by keeping them separated, they've actually been fairly efficient over the last few years. What the fear is now among the VA insiders is that if you give this to one person, and they cannot show a cost-benefit justification for this, they're going to end up contracting everything out, and the VA's marvelous open-source software will disappear. It'll all go to private vendors, and you end up with, another portion of the VA has been privatized.
The VA is using open-source software?
Yeah, they use a program called VISTA, capital V-I-S-T, capital A, that was designed originally by some VA folks and then was further developed by Perot Systems, or Ross Perot people, and all of the healthcare records are on a completely open-source system called VISTA and CPRS. Those two systems are open-source. Anybody can have access to it. And it is considered
not to the data,
standard.
But to the software. Yeah,
to the software, not to the information, obviously.
And finally, we just have a minute left here, Larry. Phishing for veterans. Veterans need to be on the lookout for emails.
Veterans, and everybody now, everybody in the military, because we just found out yesterday that virtually every person who's on active duty in the military now is on this stolen data list, which is absolutely inexcusable. There's no reason for this. But there are email scams out there. There are phone scams, people calling up and saying, "Hi, I'm so-and-so with the VA. Your name has appeared on the list. We just want to verify your data." Do not believe it. The VA doesn't call you. The VA doesn't email you. Don't fall for it. They're after your bucks.
There you go. Well said. And for more information, you can go to VAWatchdog.org and read all about it. Larry Scott, the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org. Larry, thanks for being with us.
Thanks again, Tom.
And for the great work you're doing. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth in Broadcasting for a change.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Welcome back. You're light at the end of the tunnel. Talk radio. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 34 minutes past the hour. 1-866-440-THOM. Our telephone number. Mike in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, I'll get right to the point. There's some techniques that have been used successfully against some of the neo-Nazi groups that I think might work well with the Republicans and some of the voting machine companies, and that is to bring a civil lawsuit. There are two bases that I think could work. One is called a 1983 action. It's under federal law. And if someone acts under color of state law or government law, and they violate constitutional rights, they can be held civilly liable. The other one is called RICO. It's commonly referred to as racketeering. And there's a civil version of that. And if you find an enterprise, and that could be the Republican National Committee, as well as members of legislatures, as well as voting companies, you can go after them for huge, huge amounts. You also can seek to discover documents and sanction them if they don't turn them over. And I think that's one tool that can be used to really hammer home about all these voting violations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the RICO laws and just the whole bit. I think that we just need to throw everything at them possible. And this is why I was very, very pleased last night when Robert Kennedy told me that he's looking for. He said, in fact, he said, if anybody, particularly in Ohio, but anywhere in the country, knows of crimes that are being committed, fraud that's being committed against voters, to let him know, because they're going to start trying to prosecute this stuff and to contact him and Mike Papatino and their law firm down in Florida, and I think it's in St. Petersburg, Florida. And they're looking for whistleblowers. So
the interesting thing is, you know, if you can find a commonality to the Republican National Committee, you can link together multiple states. You could link Florida and Ohio and other states.
Right.
And if you've got that link, you can choose the state and the particular district of the federal court that you bring the lawsuit in, so that you can avoid a Republican stronghold or, you know, an area where a lot of the judges are just not going to give it a fair shake. So
it's getting harder and harder now. More than half of all federal judges have been appointed by Republican presidents, you know.
Yeah, although, you know, Chief Justice Earl Warren was appointed by Eisenhower. Harry Blackmun, who wrote Roe v. Wade, was a Nixon appointee. So that's not just that's not the end of it. Just because who appointed him.
No, you're right.
Anyway, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Preston in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Preston, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was just checking out your very interesting message board. There's one poster actually named Anti-Fascist who I think has been doing incredible work over the past few months, and I really learn a lot every time I visit it. I was tuning into your discussion as well over the elections and possible manipulation and fraud of that, and I also heard Randy speaking with Greg Palast yesterday over the same issue, and I was wondering if you knew or if you had heard about any investigations regarding whether or not there was any vote manipulation regarding the Green Party votes. You know, maybe a few of their votes disappeared down some Diebold rabbit hole as well. You know,
Looks sort of like it's the other way around. David Cobb, who was the Green Party candidate for president, is a friend of mine, and he sued the state of Ohio, he told our listeners the story here on this program. I mean, him and Michael Badnarik, because it looked like in some places they were getting too many votes. This is the old paperclip trick, in my opinion. This is how I think it happened. I remember, you know, back years ago, hearing the stories about it with punch card voting. The way it works is the punch card, you know, has little squares on it that you punch out, and you slide the punch card into an envelope, essentially.
Yeah.
And it seats down at the very bottom of that envelope. And the names that are printed on the overlay that goes over the envelope are calibrated to the assumption that the card is all the way to the bottom of the envelope. So when you punch a name, it punches a particular hole out. Well, if you simply take a paper clip and slide it down into that envelope, then everybody who comes in after you will slide their card down. It'll hit that paper clip, and the paper clip is about a quarter inch, you know, wide, you know, side to side, right? And it's in there, laying in there sideways. So the card now is offset by a quarter inch. So everything that you punch is actually being punched one row lower than you thought it was.
Okay.
So what this does is it causes a high number of third party candidates to show up when you've got, you know, the third party candidates running, you know, in the second, third, fourth rows.
Yeah. Well, I could.
And that happened in Ohio hugely.
Yeah, I could see them working the mechanics of it in many different ways, and also working it so that in some places the Greens or some other third party will get more votes and less votes someplace else. For instance, when Nader and Winona LaDuke were running, they were looking for 5% of the vote, and they had a lot of popular support. They had 80% of the population wanted them in the debates. They had huge rallies of 10,000.
You're talking the 2000 election?
10,000 people.
Are you talking the 2000 election, President?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, see, I voted for Ralph Nader in the 2000 election.
Okay.
So I
wonder if they maybe didn't achieve the 5% they needed. Instead, it just so happened to work out so perfectly, especially the vote in Florida, that they could make Ralph Nader the national target, a person that they've been going after for four decades for the incredibly important work that he's been doing.
The reality is that Ralph Nader didn't cause Al Gore to lose the 2000 election, and I don't think anybody is suggesting that seriously any longer. The reality is that Al Gore won the 2000 election.
It's interesting.
Period.
Yes.
I mean, he won the national vote. He won the vote in Florida.
Too. That's a good point, too. And one last point I'd like to make. There's a fantastic documentary about John Kerry, who I voted for in 2004, but I still sent money to Nader's campaign because I think it's an important effort for him to get his voice and the voice of grassroots activists out there. But there's a good documentary on John Kerry called Going Up River, and there's a scene where they're plotting to nail Kerry, and Nixon was talking to his buddies, and they said, "We don't want him, John Kerry, to become another Nader." I thought that was a very interesting scene.
Interesting. Well, good Preston, thanks for the call.
Tom. Bye-bye.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Wes in University Place, Washington. Hey, Wes, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Wes.
Okay.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I heard your talk with the guy from the VA Association there and how they're attempting to privatize the agency. And this is something to do with a currently enlisted soldier, and he's going to give a speech today at a ministry here in Tacoma.
Yeah, you're talking about Lieutenant Aaron Watada.
Yes.
I'm looking at his picture right here.
He's going to refuse to go back to Iraq, and he says that he does not want to lead his soldiers into this. He feels it's an immoral war now, and that he was lied to by the president. So.
Yep, we've been mentioning that in the newscast at the top of every hour, and David has been working on trying to get him on the program. We've been having some difficulty getting through to him. I mean, he's active duty military right now. He's got a lot of things to do other than be on a radio show. But I just want to salute Lieutenant Watada for having the courage of his convictions. He is willing to take the consequences. He's willing to go to prison over this.
Indeed.
And there's a very good chance he will.
He tried to resign earlier in the he tried to get a change of status, and then when they wouldn't take that, he tried to resign his commission, and they wouldn't take that either. So he's forced into this position.
Yep. And he says that the order to deploy to Iraq, in his opinion, is illegal, and therefore he's going to refuse to honor it. And I salute and honor him for that. Thank you very much for the call, Wes, and for bringing the topic up. I appreciate it. Paul in Eureka, California. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. So I heard Senator Kerry a few weeks before RFK's article came out on a show, and they were asking him about Ohio and why didn't he contest it more, and he was very articulate, and he said he just didn't have the numbers. Mm-hmm. So then that article came out, and it's so specific, and it has the footnoted details. And after no traction at all from the mainstream media, I thought after you were going through it today so well, I wondered what Senator Kerry had to say, and so I called.
Mm-hmm.
And his office, you know, I told him this whole story, and I said, so what is Senator Kerry's response to this article? And the guy was quiet for a second. He said, well, we have legal counsel on staff, and they are investigating the whole thing, and we are formulating a response.
Hmm.
So either
it's a non-answer answer, or they're in the back channels sitting around going, maybe we can do something with this.
I said, he was robbed, we was robbed. I hope that they don't let this stand.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we can't. I mean, this is why I'm going to pound on this thing for a good long time. And we can't take the voices of those who say, oh, you know, get over it, quit whining, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that it's like I said, you know, if somebody kicks in your door and steals your furniture or you know, takes something about, if somebody steals your car, what am I going to tell you to, hey, get over it?
It's too important. It's not an option. So thank you, Tom.
That's right. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. No, it absolutely is too important. It is not an option. And we're talking about the theft of an election. We're talking about the theft of democracy. I mean, this is even more important than somebody stealing my car. And I'll tell you, if somebody stole my car, I'd want to get it back. And I'd want them to at least pay some sort of a price for their behavior so that, if nothing else, they will be discouraged from stealing somebody else's car. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
One day the earth woke up and said, boy, it's getting hot. And remember all those trees I had, but now there ain't a lot. And my eyes kept slowly trickling down to where the party's at. And if everybody's going there, well, that's the end of that.
And welcome back. Telling the truth to multinational corporations who would really rather you didn't know about. Tom Hartman here with you. Brian Bilbray, the Republican, versus Francine Busby, the Democrat, in San Diego. This is really interesting. I mean, this is really interesting. I'm confounded by this. I'm looking at the San Diego website, the UnionTribune.org website for the San Diego Union Tribune, and they say that Brian Bilbray, the Republican, this is for Duke Cunningham's seat. Brian Bilbray got 60,319 votes, right? 60,000 votes. Francine Busby got 55,587 votes. Okay, so there's fewer than a 5,000 vote margin there, first of all, so Busby can ask for a recount. But secondly, this is 60,000 votes to 55,000 votes, more or less. But you go down to the very bottom and it says there are approximately 68,500 absentee and provisional ballots still to be counted. Say what? 68,500 absentee and provisional ballots still to be counted. And the vote right now is separated by fewer than 5,000 votes. And there's 68,000 still to be counted. If this is right, if this website, if this information is correct, then I would say this race is still very much, very much up in the air out there. So I don't know. We'll see how this thing works out. Sharon in Camano Island, Washington. Is it? Am I pronouncing that right, Sharon? Sharon. Sharon, I'm gonna put you on hold. We'll come back to you in a minute. We'll make sure that you're there. Michelle in Long Beach, California. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the program. No, Michelle. Oh, Michelle took off. Okay, let's try Barb in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Barb.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I've been listening to you this morning, and you've been posing the question all morning about why aren't the Democrats doing anything. And yeah. I guess my response to that is, you know, why are you surprised? And only from the standpoint that with everything that this administration has done, they've got a whole arsenal in their war chest, and they can't even come up to support a censure resolution. And then the Democratic Party goes and supports people against Rick Santorum like they do, and it's candidates that we clearly don't want. And I think that
Bob Casey?
Yes, and I think that they do not represent what I think the Democratic Party used to represent. And I think the proof is in the pudding of John Tester's win in Montana.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Democratic Party hasn't figured out yet that the DLC Dems, the Bob Casey Dems, the Joe Lieberman Dems, the Evan Bay Dems, don't actually represent the mainstream of America, much less the Democratic Party.
That's exactly right. And with everything that has gone over the last 5 years, with all the proof that is out there now, and you know, including Bobby Kennedy's latest article, it's dumbfounding to me. You know, it doesn't surprise me that they're not up in arms.
Yeah.
Because they can't do anything. I mean, the guy got us into a legal war.
I know.
People are dying.
I know, Barb. I understand. And you know, on one level, I say, okay, you know, I agree. And yet, I'm sorry. If they're not going to bring the outrage, I am. We have to.
Well, we certainly saw.
I mean, you're there in Washington State. You saw what Dino Rossi, wasn't it, against Christine Gregoire?
Yes.
Yeah, you saw what he did when he thought that there was a couple hundred votes difference between these two candidates for governor. He's the Republican. I mean, he raised absolute holy hell. He was on TV every single day saying, oh, these Democrats, they're trying to steal the election. I mean, he was coming right out and saying it. And this was just a tight recount.
Right, and the Secretary of State actually held the correct recount here, which should have happened in Florida. You know,
yes.
And things were done right here and the right person won.
Yes, and God bless the election officials in Washington State. I have tremendous respect for them and that they went through it, because we're just going to let the chips fall where they may. Whereas in Florida and Ohio, it was like, oh no, a Republican is going to win, period, and that's as far as the discussion's going to go. And it is time that the Democrats fight back. And if the Democratic Party isn't going to fight back, then we have to start. I mean,
have to start putting up candidates that are viable and running on issues that the Democrats Democrats believe in, you know?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, Barb. Barb, we've got to move along, but thank you for the point. It was well made, and I appreciate it. Sharon, let's try Sharon again. Hey, Sharon, come on, Island.
Yes. Can you hear
hey,
me?
Hey, Sharon. Yes, I can.
Oh, good. You know, you asked earlier why the DLC isn't interested in this 2004 voter fraud, and the other day you asked about American Progress, I think, not being interested, and I think it's because they all didn't want Kerry to win. They're Clinton supporters, and think about it. Kerry, at the end of his campaign, had hired Clinton advisors who told him to immediately concede before any investigation had been done. And think about it. If Kerry won, Hillary would never have a chance because he'd be in 8 years, and then Edwards would get 8 years. He would have been front runner 16 years down the road. Who's going to want Hillary? So I think there's a concerted effort in that group to not shake things up. You know, Bush is a good buffoon for them, and Hillary is going to look good against him. But had Kerry Edwards gotten in, she never would have had a shot.
Mm. It's an interesting theory, Sharon.
I mean, look at it.
I sure hope
right.
It's not true.
Huh?
I sure hope it's not true.
Well, I think it is, you know, and I think, you know, Rossi, you're right. Rossi here in Washington took 6 months of lawsuits fighting the governor election here, and Kerry didn't take 3 days.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, Sharon. Thank you very much for the call and for your comments. And I would suggest everybody give John Kerry a call. You can call his office in Washington, D.C. Just give him a call and say, hey, fight this thing. It's still possible. Let's prosecute some of these guys in Ohio. I mean, Ken Blackwell should be in jail right now. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, Cato Institute, Ted Galen Carpenter is going to tell us about his concern about a coming war with China. I'll be asking about why Cato Institute is still supporting free trade. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.